Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry. From Z to Z, from Z-Man Games to Z-Man Games.
Xylophone, zebra.
Xylophone starts with an X.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. You're mocking me now.
I am.
That's 2 weeks
and
in a row.
And I'm Brett Kipp, by the way.
But damn it, next week we're back to letters that games start with.
Yeah, it was a challenge the last 2 weeks.
I just threw in the towel the last couple of weeks. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Red Kipp.
Today is July 14th, 2011.
Wow. We're halfway through July.
Don't even, as you pointed out in the pre-show, where it's only 3 weeks from Gen Con. Holy cow.
3 weeks from Gen Con, yeah. Summer's over. No, we're not there. Gen Con's not here yet.
Just so you know, folks, if you haven't booked with your printer for your Christmas releases, you're too late.
I thought you were going to say for the Gen Con release.
Yeah, no, oh no, no. You're too late to get even a prototype by Gen Con. So, anyways, show notes this week. We have a couple of corrections this week. Our mail address wasn't working because it was still going to magicgraphics.com despite that company being, out of business for about 2 years now. And so apparently whoever the company that bought the remnants of imagigraphics.com finally shut off my mail. It only took them 2 years. Way to go, sysadmin. So anyways, yeah, we got that fixed. And sure enough, we got mail after that. I was wondering where the reader mail had gone. And now I know. It was being rejected. So anyways, we are getting your email again, folks. So please, no, we haven't died. Please send us an email. And the other thing I have to apologize about, and we'll get more into this in the news, is with all the stuff going on this year, personally speaking, having moved from to Florida and then back to Florida for job-related stuff, I forgot about Protospiel.
Sigh.
I know. It's in Ann Arbor. It's like I'm back in Michigan. You'd think, da-da-da-da-da, it's right down the road. Completely forgot about it. So we're going to talk a little bit about Protospiel down in the news section. It's a great convention, folks. I think there's a Protospiel South this year, although I think it was in May. Definitely worth looking into if you're a game designer. And again, we'll talk about that in the news. News, we do have news. Guest, we do not have a guest. And we're not even doing the shows on time. And this week, Rhett, what was your excuse for not being present for the show recording?
I got in a car accident.
Yes. The other week, I know he was had the flu or he just forgot about it or something. And this week, he had to come up with something dramatic.
Yeah, but, you know, on my defense, this is only my second car accident in 30-plus years.
Oh, no, that's not a good defense. You need to haul out your gamer defense. Why were you out and about in your vehicle, Red?
I was off to the store to check on Battleship Galactica to see if – or Galaxies, I should say, to see if it had been released in mass market.
That's our man. That's the Red Kip we know and love.
Take one for the team. That's right.
That's right. You know, just don't tell that to the insurance people. Because they'll say you were using the car for business.
Yeah, I wish.
So, because, you know, we make a lot of money on this podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
You could measure it in the tens of negative dollars.
I was going to say, it's, personally, it doesn't cost me a dime, and I make just as much.
So I apologize for running late on that. I do promise we'll have guests again on the show at some point in the near future. In fact, actually, that is one of the things I wanted to go talk about in corrections. You know, we had done shows every 2 weeks, like clockwork, for about 2 years. And just in the last, I don't know, 6 to 7 months, our schedules have really fallen apart, and we're working on this. We hope to have this rectified. It's probably going to be towards the end of summer when we really start to nail our schedule back down again, folks. If you can bear with us a little while longer with the irregular shows, and the almost 3 weeks, between the shows, we do plan to get back to a 2 week schedule for everybody. So bear with us. I promise.
With guests, we'll have guests.
Not every show, but yes, we will have guests.
No, not every show.
I know you guys
we wouldn't want them every show.
No, most guests are boring.
Well, not our guests.
They take away from me talking.
That's right. They distract our audience from your ramblings.
I wasn't going to refer to them as ramblings, but yes. Anyways, on that note, let's go into the news. So, Rhett, our lead item this week is your car. Battleship Galaxies. And by the way, I'd be remiss if I did not mention our sponsor, the Purple Pawn, who also is one of our big news sources. Outstanding review. I think David did this on Battleship Galaxies up on the site. Concise, to the point, and it sounds like, gosh darn it, Mike Gray was right. 2 years ago at Gen Con, he told Dave and I about Battleship Galaxies. He wore the shirt for it and said, this is a really great game. And we were like, I don't know, Battleship? Jeez, I don't know. It sounds like a really awesome game.
Yeah, having seen the game and having now being able to sell the game at the store, I can say that the downside to this game is one word, Battleship. People's first response to this is, oh boy, another Star Wars Battleship game. And then they see it and they realize there is a serious game inside there.
Yeah, folks. Yeah. In fact, that was my initial take was this on how are you going to make Battleship interesting? And after reading David's review, they didn't.
Nothing to do with Battleship.
Nothing at all to do with the gameplay of Battleship. I think this is a big hit for them. I think this is HeroScape Mark II.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is
if you're right, they have diluted the brand so much with things like Dallas Cowboys Stratego and Star Wars Battleship and everything else Battleship and they've all done this right. But if you can get past that corporate branding, it sounds like there's a good game in here. I'm actually going to be looking for this probably this weekend.
You know, it's on its merits, especially to the consumer. It's got a great box art. You know, it's going to attract people to it. Mm-hmm. The Battleship, if you're in mass market, probably is a good name recognition. You're going to pick it up to say, ooh, what's that? Because they're not, let's face it, they're not as critical about names and games as we professional gamers.
Correct.
And the latter part of this is spectacular game inside of here from all looks that I've seen. And the hit end of it is totally expandable. Very easy ways for things to be expanded on by Hasbro with this one. And something I thought that was really cool. All it has is a Hasbro logo.
Really?
Yeah, it's not Wizards of the Coast, not Avalon Hill, not Mark Parker, not Milton, Hasbro.
That would make sense, though, if you're trading on the Battleship name.
Yeah, but it's surprising. I haven't seen that much.
That's an interesting take. And it speaks volumes about what they think about their Avalon Hill and Wizards of the Coast subsidiaries at this point, I think.
We'll go down that path at a different day.
Yes, let's do that after Gen Con. In the meantime, let's move on to our next story. And I'm including this one only, by the way, because I live in West Michigan, but Uncle Chestnut's Table Gype. I think that's how you pronounce it. GYPE. There's a couple of gamers here in West Michigan created this game. It is a Mensa. They've only done the prototype. They're actually soliciting now on Kickstarter.com. But it won one of the Mensa awards for top games of 2010. And it's in West Michigan, and it looks interesting. It looks, honest to God, Mensa really only awards games, stuff to abstract games, right? Right. Have you ever heard Mensa? Yeah. They will not award anything that seems to have a theme. This game looks actually pretty good. But it's jokingly referred to as Uncle Chestnut's, there's a story behind this, but it's called Table Gype, GYPE. If you like abstract games, look into it on Kickstarter.com and take a look, and see if you want to, either sponsor it or sign up to get a copy. Could be something, and I would be excited just because, that's the booming West Michigan game industry. So, the guy who wrote Seventh Sea actually lives 20 miles away. So there are people in West, in the BattleTech Pod people are in Kalamazoo. So there really is, you can make a claim that there's a West Michigan game.
Well, there always has been. I mean, there used to be some really nice retail outlets there, et cetera, et cetera.
Not anymore, by the way, on the retail.
Yeah, I don't even want to go down that path other than to say I was always surprised, thought they were better managed. End of story.
Okay. Moving on. Speaking of new games this week, in addition to Battleship Galaxies, have to say, I'm just going to read you the quote. This is the money quote at the top of the page from a blog that reviewed this game. And they say, and I quote, "Angry Birds is a modern day board game classic." Our next story.
I was going to say, I thought that they pretty much covered it, you know, because a lot of people know what Angry Birds is. It's got the name on the cover. I think that's all it needs.
To be, so you're saying this game could play like Hungry Hungry Hippos, and it's a modern day board game classic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's face it, there are some games out there, Left, Right, Center, and Chutes and Ladders, Candyland, that aren't really games. There's no decision making. And, you know, Angry Birds could be at that caliber, and it doesn't matter because it's Angry Birds.
I see. I disagree with you here. I think this is the iPad iPod board game equivalent of a blaxploitation flick.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, if there's some quality inherent in it, as there were in some of the early blaxploitation films, it's completely by accident and certainly not by corporate intent. So, again, best of luck to the Angry Birds board game people. I'll stay away from this one.
That's Mattel, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Which is another reason I don't trust it, because Mattel really does. They do games aimed at about four-year-olds, and then they do
toys.
Upscale party games. Well, they're trying to do some upscale party games. They did what was the one that looked like Tetris, only 2D. You know what I'm talking about? Blockus, I think was.
Oh,
Mattel.
Yeah, but none of them's a winner. But that was an acquired title. They didn't create that.
Correct.
That was out for a number of years before they picked it up.
Okay. Anyways, moving on. We have two actual news items here. One is that we missed Protospiel, and we're going to talk about that in a second because it's a little longer. But the other one is that Evil Hat Productions, who makes the Dresden Files RPG, that's kind of a minor title though, right, Rhett?
No, actually, Dresden is a
very... Sorry. It's a joke.
You're
it's a
joking
joke.
With me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Because I recall this now.
Because, yeah, there was a minor brouhaha over me referring to the Dresden Files as a minor license. Anyways, they have always been a dedicated RPG company, but they have recently announced that they are going to be printing and producing some board games. And I thought this is interesting.
I agree. You know, I think it's yet another company going after that market. You know, we've seen lots of people put their toes into the water and test this one out. And I think this is going to continue. As long as board games are still the growth market, and et cetera, people are going to follow that path. If you throw money at them, they're going to follow the money trail.
Okay. And I agree with you up to a point, except for the fact that you would be surprised if Paizo, for instance, said we're going to do board games and they're not related to our Pathfinder license.
Not really. I at this point in the market, that would not surprise me. It's about financing. It's about finding designers. Finding designers is fairly easy. There's tons of them out there and all willing to work. I mean, anybody can hire Rainer Knizia. Anybody. He is willing to work for, you know, a good amount of money, but he's willing to work for, I think, everybody. I don't think he's got a chip.
He doesn't have an exclusive contract. For instance, Martin Wallace, pretty much, I think he's locked up by Mayfair right now for his big titles. But you're right. Rainer will design for anybody. He's completely freelance. And there's an instant audience for a Rainer Knizia. It gives you instant street cred. But yeah, there are a lot of designers out there. On the other hand, I think... Okay, if you have a Dresden Files RPG, I think you should be able to bracket that pretty well in terms of how much I should spend and how much I should get back on that. And I think with board games, it's a much bigger crapshoot.
I'll go along with that, especially in the market. I mean, while the market is definitely growth and it's definitely solid, we've talked about this starting earlier this year. This is getting more diversified. There's more and more players in there. There's more and more product every week to choose from. And we're going to see that third edition backlash situation of too much stuff.
Yeah.
Hard, you know, you got to pick and choose that starts at the consumer and works its way to the retailer and eventually even gets up to the distributors. It makes it a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, and you're referring, of course, to the glut of product and the D20 explosion. You know,
referring to the glut of product of the D20, not the fact that, you know, it was the most successful fantasy RPG in face-to-face, you know, role-playing as opposed to online.
Yes.
You know, I don't take any of that away, but it did create some problems as well, and success can create its own problems, and this is the type of thing that we're seeing now. We're going to continue to see it until, you know, we choke on it, and then they'll stop.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're exactly right on that. By the way, speaking of ongoing memes, two games came out this week or in the past couple weeks that I know of for iPad. Scotland Yard, the old classic.
Yeah, I love that game.
And Ascension, the Thing of the God Slayer, Chronicle of the God Slayer came out. So both of those came out this week for iPad. And again, I think, boy, you know, at this point, I'm not going to even found a board game company. I'm just going to be the guy who buys up licenses like Scotland Yard and puts out iPad games.
Well, it's, you know, we've talked about that as the other growth market. You know, that I think is where electronics is doing its best market penetration right now, is through all the app, you know, all these different apps. And then the answer is they're relatively inexpensive, which has a lot to say for it, you know, to go out and, you know, hit that impulse buy while, hey, it's only this price of a hamburger times 20 million players.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, though, is that because there's no middle tier, right? Apple takes 30%, right?
Right.
But you make 70%. So you're making 70 cents on the dollar. Let's say you invest exactly the same amount. Say it costs you $50,000, okay, to produce your first board game or to produce an iPad game. Now, chances are an iPad game may run higher or lower, but you're now making 70 cents on the dollar as opposed to, 20% of the retail cut is going to come back into your pocket, maybe 30% if you're really lucky. So there is a bigger profit there. That you can make. So, again, and especially, by the way, if you're doing some of this in-house, you can reduce that $50,000 down, and you've already got all the artwork. So, again, we're going to see more of it. I think it's a good idea. I do hope, however, that people eventually put their iPad down and play some tabletop games.
Yeah, I heard an interesting ad the other day which just shocked me, which was something like there's currently 7 interface items for every person in the world, so that interact on the net.
What do you mean?
Just an item. So anything from your phone to your television, all those, your computers, all that thing. 7 per person on the planet. And to put that in perspective to everyone, one of my favorite pieces of trivia is as of 2009, it's still estimated that half the population of the world has never heard a telephone ring. It just puts you in an idea of, you know, where we are in the world. So anyway, with that stated, that's a lot of users. Of course, this is a good market.
Yes. So it's funny to hear old board game and tabletop guys advocating for electronics. But this would probably be one of the platforms that I am. So, which brings us to full circle. Someone has to design all of this product. And that brings us to Protospiel. And Protospiel was July 8, 9, and 10 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I apologize again. I actually spoke at Protospiel last year. And this year I did not, didn't hear from, the organizers, and I didn't get a chance to go over there. I know Will Niebling from Elfinworks was there. In fact, their sponsors were Elfinworks, EPI Services, aka Delano, and Alliance Distribution. They were all there. But if you haven't heard of Protospiel before, Protospiel is a small convention. Usually there's probably anywhere from 30 to 60 guys there. It's been growing every year, guys and women, sorry. But it is basically, it's all about prototypes. Okay. Everyone there is a game designer. And so you sit there and you play each other's games and you get feedback. I spoke on manufacturing costs the other year. I know, there were folks from Mayfair the other year. In fact, I think the folks from Mayfair, were there this year. I see Ludofact on the list. I'm assuming that's my old boss, Mr. Juan Mendez over there. Again, so you can talk to people who are in the industry, as you're designing your game. It's a great thing. It's a great, great show for first timers. It's also good if you've done this before. I know a bunch of people, from the industry who have stuff in the show, so to speak, who are, you know, they have a design that they're working on as well as, organizing the show or, attending or whatnot. So, it's a really cool show, and I completely forgot about it. Now, here's one of the really cool things about it. Let me give you an idea of why it's cool just for that. In addition to hobnobbing and talking to other designers, this year was their 10th anniversary. Every year they have a card game design contest. Okay. And the grand prize is getting the game published, in a limited run, probably 500 to 1,000 decks. And then, Alliance Distribution will distribute it. So basically what happens is, if you win the contest, they're going to print the game. Boom. You're in. Okay. So there's a real strong incentive and just, absolutely, I'm a big fan of the show. I feel like such a moron for forgetting about it, but I'll give you an idea of some of the people who are always there. It was one of the founders was Dominic Crapashetti. So I don't know if you're familiar with,
yes,
with Dominic, who designed, I forgot his game name all of a sudden now. Card game. It's the betting game.
Oh, Wits and Wagers?
Wits and Wagers. Thank you. He did Wits and Wagers and Say Anything. So anyways, yeah. So these are real people, who are really in the industry, who really do, sit down with 30 other game designers, and it's a great weekend, and I missed it.
Yeah. It's, I caught some of it, not realizing that I caught some of it with, a number of them stopping by, after the show.
Yeah. No. Make me feel even worse. So, but anyways, like I said, Protospiel is an awesome show. I highly, highly, highly recommend it for people in the industry. And like I said, this year I completely forgot about it with all the stuff going on. And so my apologies to the guys at Protospiel and my apologies to you, the listener. This is exactly the kind of stuff that I like to try and clue everybody in about. And I completely forgot about it.
So next year, extra bells and whistles for Protospiel.
Yes, next year I'm going to have to go there and beg.
Yeah, but you're in the door now.
Yeah, I might have to pay. Yeah, no, I'm teasing. It's a great show. I would happily pay to go. That said, let's move on to listener mail now that we've fixed the email address. So our first piece of email is from Mr. Mark Jacobs of Chivalry Games. We've been talking about Mark's game. Talked about it really two out of the last three shows, really, we talked about Mark's game. And he says, I was at Origins, and several people mentioned that they heard about Castle on your podcast on Purple Pawn. I checked out the podcast and wanted to thank you for mentioning the game several times. Let me know if there's anything I can do to return your favor. He says, I can help your listeners with a lot of advice due to all the years of chaos I experienced making a fairly complex game. And as you know, I'm still learning, such as package size challenges mentioned on your podcast. And I started out thinking that making a board game would be all fun and games, but the reality is that it is serious business getting a quality product to market. Thanks again, Mark Jacobs, Chivalry Games. And we're going to have Mark. I responded to Mark. We're going to try and get him on the show sometime. I told him sometime before Labor Day. So that's
which will be interesting given, we're only on twice before Labor Day, and one of those is Gen Con.
Just don't remind me.
I'm not saying anything.
So yes, hopefully I should have said by the end of the year. Maybe I can recall that email. Mark's a tech guy. He probably already read it. Anyways, long story short, Mark hadn't been listening to the podcast. He's listening now. And again, we wish him the best of luck, and we'll catch up with him at Gen Con fairly shortly here. And our next email is from regular contributor. I think we should just call him that right now. Regular contributor Dan Jensen. And wanted to go into, he also points out that his emails have bounced because of my email problems. That's fixed now, by the way. Email address is still the same for those of you following along at home. And he says, I just wanted you to know about an online card game collectible, that seems to have flown under your radar. The game is called Urban Rivals, and it's actually a pretty good game, fast paced with good strategy. Now, you and I were talking in the last show about online card games. People have been trying to do adaptations, and I said it hadn't really worked.
Right.
So he says Urban Rivals is pretty good. We'll see. So he goes, okay, now for something scary. He says, in the last episode, you discussed boxes. To be more precise, bad boxes. Here's the scary thing. Last week, I was thinking, would not game boxes make a good topic for an episode for my favorite podcast, Paper Money? Maybe I should write them an email about that. Ha, 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 ha. We read his mind. So.
Yeah, it's actually very confusing in the translation. But anyway.
Yes, exactly. Suffice to say, he was thinking it and we did it. So Dan, I want you to think about me and Salma Hayek. That's me as in me, not you, Dan. Me and Salma Hayek. because he apparently has the power. So she'll at least be talked about on the podcast.
I was going to say, so we'll talk about it. You know, he's just thought about it, and we've now talked about her on the podcast. So there we go. We're covered.
Okay, think harder, Dan. Think harder. So anyway, so he says, I'd like to hear about how good packaging should be. He says, you keep saying the box should fit the game, but if you look at several games, they frequently use bigger boxes. A good example is Race for the Galaxy. I just bought a new copy of that recently, and we'll talk about that in a second. Just a few cards, but a big box. So the way I figure is there a correlation between big size and exposure leading to more sales, and also, maybe more importantly, between box size and price? Bing, 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 bing. There are several smaller games that have really small boxes like Flux or No Thanks. Are they good boxes? I've heard that small boxes are not good because they can easily be stolen, but I do not know how prone games are to be stolen. Also, I've heard that because the smaller packages, the games have to be placed next to the cash register or close to it like Magic, and there is only that much space available, and that may lead to games not stocking the game. Also, would it be nice to hear your opinion on box design and the different... Oh, my God, Dan, we can't talk about all of this in the... This is like a whole show all over again about boxes. we'll talk about box design and art and stuff like that on a different show, but I do want to talk about what you've touched on with Race for the Galaxy. In that, okay, Race for the Galaxy, I just bought this to give as a gift. It's $38. Okay, now there are... What you get is a full color insert, cardboard insert that's, and down in the center of that cardboard insert in what we call the well, there's, I don't know what, like maybe 100 to 130 cards.
I think it's closer to the latter, more like 130, 140.
Yeah. So you get 130 cards and a quarter size rule book. And you get some, and then to justify the price, they give you the player aid cards, right? Which are roughly 8.5 by 5 or 5.5 by 8.5.
Yeah. When you say quarter size, you should say journal size. Otherwise, some of our listeners might think it's actually the size of a quarter.
Which
would be, interesting marketing. Right,
well, the note cards are that size, but I thought the rule book was actually a little smaller. It was narrower than 8.5 by 5.5. But anyways, long story short is you can't charge $38 unless you use a fairly large box for that stuff. Otherwise, I can get 110 cards and a flip-top box for $10.
Yeah, there's a perception question a lot of times in packaging. One of the ones that we regularly encounter at all levels is what we refer to as the heft factor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picking up my $50 game, and if it's got a good weight to that $50, I'm pretty satisfied. On the other hand, man, that's a really light game. It almost doesn't matter what the contents are. People are starting to question $50.
Yeah. Now, see, this is one of the cool things with Race for the Galaxy. Look, Race for the Galaxy is priced for expectations. For $38, you expect a hardcore game. And that's what you get. Okay. Now, take the same components, repackage them into what's called a tuck box, right? Like an Uno box, or I think even Flux is Flux uses a slightly different box now. But it's the kind of, with the flip up bottom, and like a deck of cards box, flip up bottom, flip up top. You sometimes have a riser on the back, but that's a tuck box. They're really cheap. Okay. But if you put 130 cards in a rule book in a tuck box, the expectation is such that even if it costs you $20 to make, the market for that kind of a box is probably going to be somewhere between $10 and $17.
Yeah.
You're not going to expect a game out of that box. You're going to expect a social game.
Yeah. I think that's why the Flux games actually switched to those larger boxes, mm-hmm. is because they were cracking that, $20 point.
Yes. I want to say too that the style of box they switched to might have been cheap. It might have been cheaper.
It's possible.
I had tangential involvement with that when they first started on that road, and then Delano Services imploded, and EPI has picked up the business that they're doing, and so they're printing that now. Understanding was they switched to that it's a fold up box.
Right.
And it's kind of self-assembles, but I think it's marginally cheaper than the old tuck boxes.
Well, if we're lucky, since I know their old marketing person who currently works at Sandstorm, I'm sure we can probably have an opportunity to speak to them soon.
I can't imagine anyone. Sorry, the folks who run Looney Labs are really great people, but they're very idiosyncratic. Classic game company. And so I can imagine that someone actually did leave Looney Labs to go work somewhere else. So great people. I love Andrew and all the folks over at Looney Labs. Don't get me wrong, but they're amusing. Anyways, long story short, so box design, normally what you want to do is, like I said, design the box to fit the game. However, especially with the card games, there's some leeway on this, and you have to price for expectation. Classic version of this, and we've used this example before, is I was talking to Mayfair, and they had this one box that they used for all their $20 games. And they shoehorned a bunch more junk into it, and this game, I forget what game it was, but it was they priced it out at $24.95, and it didn't sell. And part of the reason was that box was a $20 game box to everybody, right? It wasn't a $25 game box. So there were some expectations on the box size. So it is something to think about. We'll have to revisit the packaging again. I think that'd be a good Christmas topic, you know, as everybody's opening presents and stuff. We'll have to talk about boxes again.
We can get into it. And, you know, one of the things that was actually pointed out here by Dan was, you know, he asked a couple of art questions, and maybe we can, you know, find one of our art directors out there and bring them on the show for a conversation along those lines, because we haven't actually had an art director on the show yet.
I just want to get the guys to do the old squad leader modules.
Oh, over at Multiman, you mean?
No, the old Avalon Hill art. It's all triangles.
Oh yeah.
If you look at it, it's a classic art pattern. This is to have a triangle focal point or something with the art, but every single one of their products is like that. Anyways, let's move on. Again, Dan, excellent questions. We could sit here and talk about boxes all night and lose everybody. And,
before we get off topic on that.
Oh yeah.
Dan, if you want to see a great package, and we talked about okay, and our listeners have just switched. If you want to see great packaging,
thank you.
One of the best ones I can give you is, we've talked before about spine out and all that kind of stuff. Take a look at the Catalyst's 5-book series in the BattleTech line when they're spine out, and the image that creates, and how many I've just talked to them, and how many people have picked up a book. They're not particularly interested in, doesn't fit in with the rest of the game system so much, but they want the full image.
That would be me, actually, because there was at least one, possibly two, of the BattleTech books that I bought just to make the spine, so I could make the picture on the spine.
You're in good company. There's a number of people who've even commented about that.
Yeah, because there's the technical operations book. There's no way I'm not designing my own mechs. I refuse to.
Uh-oh, did I lose you there, or did you lose me?
What? I hear you. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I lost you for a moment there, but you came back.
Okay. Anyways, so let's move on to our next letter, which is from Mr. Chris Kreuter of Masquerade Games. And he says, just wanted to drop a quick note to thank you for all the advice back in the day with regards to getting our first game published. He says, Epigo is debuting at this year's Gen Con convention. He says, after you introduced us to Juan Mendez and the guys at Ludifact, we quickly progressed with them to manufacturing Epigo. Juan also hooked us up with Alliance, who will be doing our fulfillment and distribution. It's been a long road, and we've learned an incredible amount in the process, especially with setting up art files for production. You know, we haven't talked about it on the show. I'm departing from his letter here, by the way. We haven't talked about that on the show, Rhett, so maybe we do talk about setting up art files at some point, get an art designer on here, or an art director.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
All right, so let's go. He goes, Epigo will be releasing to stores near the end of July, and we're gearing up for a big debut at Gen Con. There's something you did right, Rhett. It's in the stores and at Gen Con at the same time.
Positive aspect. Yep, love that.
Yep. If you and Rhett are going to the show, be sure to swing by Masquerade Games booth 1551 near the concession area. So yes, we're definitely going to stop by. And now we have to get to the part where he pats us on the back. He says, thanks for all the great work you do on Paper Money Podcast. Your take on the hobby from multiple perspectives is always informative, and the banter is entertaining. Many little bits were key points for us during the process. Please keep up the good work. If you're ever looking for guests, we'd be more than happy to discuss the experiences and sometimes frightening reality of publishing a board game. That's kind of, that's an interesting adjective. Mark Jacobs didn't use the word frightening, but I suspect he was implying it. If there's any other ways we can support the show, please let us know. And again, check them out, maskgames.com. That's MaskGames, Mask Games. That's Masquerade Games. And thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. And, maybe we should have, like, Chris and Mark on the show.
That would be interesting as they're both new, and post-Gen Con, so that they've had an opportunity to see how their products go.
Yeah, my DSL connection might implode attempting to do that, but we'll see if we can do that or not.
And while Ben may have the opportunity to, meet and greet with you at Gen Con, I will try. On occasion, the shackles come off and I'm allowed to leave the booth.
But yeah, I have distinctly not... I'm not working this year at Gen Con.
And I distinctly am, I'm going yet again, working at Gen
Con. It's different, though. You have a deal. You work with them. I worked the booth last year at Catalyst and had a ton of fun. The problem was that I couldn't play as much as I wanted to. So this year I just...
Play games?
Yes. So I played boatloads of Leviathans.
Well, there you go. And you could do the same this year, from what I've been told. Actually, with the actual game.
No.
I'll believe it when it's in my hand.
I they're not going to. Maybe.
I'll believe it when it's in my
hand. Is it for sale or a prototype?
It will be for sale.
All right.
That is the rumor. They're flying. They're in an airplane. And they're supposed to arrive.
Okay, folks.
24 hours before Gen Con.
You heard it here first. And by the way, just so you know, Rhett, I'm going to kill somebody if I don't get a copy. So make sure to stash one under the table for me.
Well, I was going to say the deal this year for me to work was the one copy immediately went off to my room to never, ever get on the floor.
I've been looking
home with this one for lots of reasons.
Oh, good. So, all right. So maybe I can weasel a pre-release copy out. That'd be awesome. So anyways, all right. Rhett, how can other people call us or write us and email us and tell us how great we are?
Well, they can email us at papermoney@thepurplepawn.com.
Try it again.
At papermoney at. What's wrong?
You said thepurplepawn.com.
Oh, you're right. I said thepurplepawn.com. Once more, into the breach.
Yes.
papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. Oh, I love saying that one. You can phone us at 773-634-9377.
And you can find us on the web at purplepawn.com/papermoney. And if you want to find our RSS feed, it's purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. And Rhett, I didn't put any upcoming stuff here because I wasn't entirely certain. We have 3 weeks until Gen Con. I do not want to be sitting around Tuesday night before Gen Con trying to tape a show.
It would be a challenge since I won't be here. I will be already on the floor setting up.
Exactly. Well, I'll be down there Wednesday night. And, I helped you set up last year, but it was really hot in there.
It's always really hot in there.
Yeah, folks.
They don't turn the air conditioning on until they finish setup because, with the dock doors open, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Last year, they actually did turn the air conditioning on. It helped a lot. It was amazing how much it helped, even though, as you said, it was hot in there. We were ready to, have people pass out. It was so hot.
Yeah, that's actually – this is a good tip, by the way, for those of you attending your first conventions. They really don't turn on the air conditioning because, one, as Red said, the dock doors are open, and, two, it costs a boatload of money. So they wait till the people have paid to come in. Till it's crowded with people before they turn on the air. They'll turn it on the night before all those people show up. But while you're just setting up, they don't care. You're going to sweat. Bring water, which is good advice anyway.
I was going to say, bring water, dress appropriately. It will be hot. It will be sweaty. It will be dirty. And be prepared for it. My general suggestion is, if you're good with it, bring your shorts and t-shirts and all the other good stuff that you would use to, roll around in the dirt with.
And I have one other bit of advice, especially this goes out to Masquerade Games, who's unveiling at Gen Con. Bring candy. Have candy at your booth.
Oh, yeah. It's always
If you're Catalyst or FFG or, an established company, people are going to stop by your booth anyway. But if you're a small company and you have to pitch a demo a lot, okay, And so you need people to stop by the booth out of curiosity. Put a bowl of candy out. Mints or mints, cinnamon discs, chocolate, by the way, we'll get them in droves. But it costs
and
a little more.
And we'll be gone quickly.
Yes. But I did this at, when I'd go to New York Toy Fair. I would put out a bowl of mints or Hershey's Kisses or something like that. And it keeps your, it gives you something to do right during the show. So you can, you know, drink some water and grab a mint, and it's like, you know, a little perk. But also people will stop by and grab the mint in your brochure.
Yeah. And one of the other ones that I particularly like along those lines is I played in a demo a number of years ago where the objectives were all candy.
Oh, who did that?
I believe that was West End a really long time ago.
Oh, somebody else did this just recently with, it was like the Starship. It was like Attack Vector. It was the Attack Vector Starship system. Okay. The game that was so realistic, it was easier to do the physics.
Yeah.
Than to shoot missiles. Lasers were fine, but once you launched missiles, it was hellish. I got lost. So anyways, it was so much for my college calculus. Anyway, suffice to say, they had Hershey's Kisses. I think you were trying to target with the lasers. But, all right. Rhett, take us out of here.
Well, that's all for this show. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark.
Crocodiles! Oh, I was having a dream. The only thing I remember was a curious lack of crocodiles. So I began to call out for them.